From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones with an amazing story of why so many birds are dying, followed by open lines with Cheryl. Here's what's happening. President Joe Biden has urged local governments to pay people to get vaccinated against COVID-19 and to set new rules requiring federal workers to provide proof of vaccination or face regular testing, mask mandates, and travel restrictions. The measures are Biden's latest attempt to spur reluctant Americans to get vaccinated as the Delta variant of the coronavirus apparently surges throughout the nation. More states and cities, most recently Washington, D.C., are bringing back full mask mandates or strong masking recommendations in the wake of the new Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's guidance that most vaccinated people should also wear masks indoors in public places. Eating a plateful of colorful foods like strawberries and peppers, which include flavonoids, could slow your cognitive decline, according to a new study. That's a good thing. People who ate about 600 milligrams of flavonoids per day had a 20% lower risk of cognitive decline when they get older. Loneliness has become a major mental talking point during the coronavirus pandemic. It's particularly prevalent among older people, of course, something that generally went without discussion before quarantines allowed much of society to see how painful living alone can be for some people. Now a new study is revealing how dangerous feeling lonely can be for seniors, especially when it comes to taking medications. Researchers from the University of California, San Francisco, say older adults who consider themselves very lonely are much more likely to be using prescription painkillers, anti-anxiety drugs, and powerful opioids than other seniors who are a little more active. Dr. Peter Breggin, our resident psychiatrist and author of Medication Madness, with us. Peter, tell me about your reaction to this study.
Well, it was very, very good until it got to the opioids. And I'd like to address this a little bit, really, to folks in some detail, because this is very dear to my heart. I have a chapter in that book that you happened to mention by chance, Medication Madness, on psychiatric drug withdrawal, how to get off these drugs. That's a real cheap way to get an introduction because, you know, you get that book secondhand if you want online. But I've also written I'm the only American physician and the only psychiatrist in the world to ever write a book about getting off these drugs.
Most of them want you on them.
That's all they know how to do. So the opiate, you know, if grandma, grandpa, if me or somebody else who's older are taking opiates at a very steady pace, and they're not abusing them, they're much safer than psychiatric drugs. And that study proved it because the correlations were non-significant. So they just had to throw that in for the CDC, who hates opiates.
Well, tell me, though, about people being lonely.
Well, the thing I wanted to get into more, George, was to talk a little bit about the drugs. Could I do that?
Well, let's do that. Let's do that afterwards, you know, because we got a lot of people who are lonely.
Yeah. Being lonely is awful. It feels terrible. It makes you think there's something wrong with you. It makes you think that you're mentally ill. It's shameful. And these studies that show how many people are lonely, they don't come near showing it because it's embarrassing to be lonely. You ask the average person if you're lonely, even if they are, they're going to say, "Oh, no, I'm not lonely."
Even though they are.
A really, really serious thing. And the way the doctors deal with this serious thing is wrong. So let me go to how to deal with it. In older people especially, they're going to need some help. But you need not drugs, but social interventions, George. There are so many community programs in every town that are usually free, and many of them are opening back up if they close. And people, they need to socialize.
Sure.
Older people actually have a greater need to socialize than younger people. There are volunteer programs. There are volunteers at churches. You can get paid AIDS into your home. to help once a week, twice a week, whatever you need. And then there's yourself, you know, are you a son or a daughter or a friend? So what people need is not the drugs. And the drugs are very dangerous to older people, especially, you know, they get delirious, they get dementia from the psych drugs, not from the routine use of opiates, from the routine use of psych drugs. And they get apathetic and they get indifferent, and that makes people think they're just old. And they get a lot of illnesses and they die earlier on these drugs. So, you know, it's really important to talk to your physician, your healthcare provider. And if you're a healthcare provider, it must be thousands, hundreds of thousands listening to this show, you know, learn about taking people off the drugs. It has to be done slowly, carefully, and believe it or not, lovingly.
And what's one of the sad parts, too, is during COVID's at its peak, and it may come back to that, Peter, they shut down so many things. Communities shut down little centers, restaurants closed, and people really got lonely. Thank you. A flight attendant union is asking federal officials to take action against unruly passengers, claiming their behavior has gotten out of control and is putting other flyers and flight risk crews at risk. After conducting a recent survey of nearly 5,000 flight attendants, the Association of Flight Attendants found that 85% have faced unruly passengers in just recent months as air travel levels continue to climb. The United States Congress has approved emergency funding to replenish the Capitol Police and bolster security after the January 6 riots by supporters of then-President Donald Trump and to evacuate Afghans who helped American forces from their country. That's good stuff. The coronavirus pandemic has caused a backlog at the Social Security processing centers, meaning some claimants and beneficiaries have yet to receive key documentation and money from the program. Let's check in with Catherine Austin Fitz on this one. Catherine, people are going to need their SSI. What's going on here?
George, I don't know. You know, in my experience, the federal government never has any problem getting money to the big corporations and the billionaires. They can do that very quickly.
Right, they sure can.
So when they say it's a slowdown, you know, when I was a government official, nine times out of ten, there's a policy going on that has nothing to do with operational. You know, they always say it's the systems. Now, sometimes it can be the systems, but I'm a skeptic.
And in this kind of situation, of course, is it just a matter of paperwork? What do you think it is?
No, it's a matter of being overly dependent on the federal government and letting all of our money run through the federal government.
They're right.
And so I want you to know on the West Coast, it's Thursday, but on the East Coast, it's Friday. And Friday, George, at the Salier Report is Cash Friday. If you come into the Salier Report, you'll see Cash Friday up on the right. And on Friday, we're asking everybody to use cash. Don't use digital money, because where this is going, the more we have central control through digital systems, the more the small businesses and Main Street are going to get skimmed. And so what I would say is if you don't like what's happening with this kind of games on the central systems, use cash on Friday. And if you can, use cash every day. It's time to reverse the central control.
Unless they take our cash away, Catherine, let's hope they don't. The largest Alaska earthquake since 1965 caused a tsunami warning and local evacuations along the southwest Gulf of Alaska coast late Wednesday last night. After tsunami waves of less than 1 foot arrived on shore, the warning has now been canceled and coastal residents have returned home. It was an 8.2. That is huge. An unusual and potentially dangerous situation unfolded at the International Space Station as the newly docked Russian module inadvertently fired its thrusters, causing a tug-of-war with the space station and briefly pushing it out of position. That could have been a disaster. Demons Among Us, shocking real-life stories from the paranormal. M.R. Gorga joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. M.R. Gorga with us has been a copywriter, journalist with film and TV credentials, bringing his talents to the paranormal and horror genre. A child in the wake of the Amityville Horror in the Summer of Sam, his talent for crafting some hair-raising tales, was first recognized in the fourth grade. MR, welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. What happened in the fourth grade to get everybody to notice you?
I love this story. We were assigned to, the class was assigned to write a story, and so I decided to write some kind of horror story that entailed some type of mummy. And when I handed it in, I was all nervous because, you know, I'm sure that wasn't the content they were expecting from someone in the fourth grade. And when I handed it in that night, my teacher called my parents, and I thought I was in trouble. And he said it was quite the opposite. He said, you know, your son has a real gift for writing. You need to sign him up for the Young Authors Club right away. And so it was quite the opposite. I thought I was going to get in trouble, and he ended up calling up my parents to praise me about this story about some creepy mummy I wrote.
How did you get interested in the strange and unusual?
I think it was because of just kind of growing up in that atmosphere at that time was Summer of Sam was happening, Amityville Horror came out, and I was taken to the movies, and that movie just left an indelible impression on me, and I guess it carried over into my writing interests.
I used to go see all those kinds of movies, and one of the movies, MR, that got to me when I was a kid was the original House on the Haunted Hill with Vincent Price.
Uh-huh.
That was just eerie as all get up.
Well, it stuck with me. It was that scene with the pig demon with the red eyes and it's looking through the window. And I can still see it now.
Tell us about Demons Among Us.
Well, Demons Among Us is a book about it rips the veil off the paranormal to expose what's really happening in the unseen world, or the all those creepy and haunting things that we can't see, and it gives you a sneak peek behind the scenes, and it has truly terrifying personal accounts that are my own, historical accounts of the first fully documented eyewitness account of demonic possession in American history, which happened 20 years or so before the Salem witch trials. And it also talks about how dark forces influence the world around us without us really even knowing it.
It's going to go down as a classic, by the way, so congratulations on that.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for saying that.
And it just came out a couple months ago, didn't it?
It did. I published it in February. To Amazon, but it took me quite some time to write.
What's your take, MR, on demons? What do you think they are?
Well, I believe that they are fallen angels. They had a rebellion in heaven, and for the rebellion, they were kicked out of heaven, and now they exist and rule in the cosmos, and this earth is partly their home.
You're probably right about that. And, of course, they still work under the devil's guidance, don't they?
Yes, they do. Yes, absolutely.
What do you think they want?
I believe they want to steal, kill, and destroy, and they want to mar God's creation.
In your book, as you document some of the eyewitness cases of demonic possession in American history, let's go way back with the time we've got before the first break here. And let's talk about that. How did they document these first cases?
Well, this case that we're talking about, it takes place in early Massachusetts, and it happened between a minister of a small frontier town, a small forest town in early New England. And it happened between him and his 16-year-old servant. And she had started exhibiting some really strange signs that really kind of caught his attention. And then after 2 weeks into this, he's decided to start writing in his journal a full blow-by-blow account pretty much every day of what was happening to this young maid, these afflictions and atrocities that had befallen this young girl.
And how would you categorize this case compared to other things you've heard? Pretty high up there?
This is very high up there. That's the reason why it made it into the book. The story is so incredible, and it's so disturbing that it literally is a story that's been glossed over and just fell through the cracks of history. And so when I discovered the story and started peeling away at it, I said, this has got to come to light, because this story is so phenomenal and it is so unnerving that this has to be brought to people's attention.
And in terms of these demons, they're still out there today. And what do you think they want? Our souls, or disrupt our lives? What do they want?
Well, they want to steal, kill, and destroy. But what they do on a daily basis is harass, oppress, and anything that they want to steal the attention away from God. They ultimately want to kill you. Is their ultimate goal. And because the reason is that you have, and I have, and every human has the chance to experience what they had lost in heaven. And so they have the opportunity to become the apple of God's eye, and they no longer have the love of God. And so, and because of that, it's out of a great jealousy that they have mocked humanity.
Not everybody, MR, has a demonic experience, and that's a good thing, but why?
That's a really great question. I really don't know why. I mean, there are many, many, many historical accounts of, demonic encounters. Possession, of course, is the most extreme. But there are so many accounts throughout history it has to be true. You know, I started off with the book with a Chinese philosopher, and he said, if since the beginning of time men have heard the voices and seen heard disembodied voices and seen these spirits of men, how then can we say these things do not exist? So these things have been happening since the dawn of time, and there are many, many documented, cases of people seeing spirits and demonic entities.
They seem to enjoy creating chaos in people's lives, don't they?
That's the truth, absolutely. They cause, they're here to cause chaos, destruction, and here to destroy.
In the middle section part of your book, you've talked about how demons influence the world around us. Boy, if there's anything going on right now, it's kind of demonic, don't you think?
Yeah, I believe it's absolutely demonic. I think what we're seeing is an uprising in demonic activity at a level that hasn't been seen before, since I've been alive. And they work in ways in that people wouldn't really, really think that they work in, because these, what we're talking about is demon forces and their spirits. And what people don't realize is that the everyday influence is they work as spirits of fear or spirits of depression or spirits of suicide. So these types of things that influence people's lives are actually spirits ultimately driving into deeper and deeper despair.
We're with MR Gorga. His website is his Facebook account, which you can find linked up at coasttocoastam.com. But if you're on Facebook now, just put in MR Gorga, G-O-R-G-A, as one word, and his link will pop up for you. His book is called Demons Among Us, Shocking Real-Life Stories from the Paranormal, And we're going to get into more of these when we come back in a moment. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. Not only am I expecting a question from you for MR, but if you have had some kind of demonic experience yourself or know someone who has, share that story with us too. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, MR Gorga with us tonight for the first couple hours. His book, Demons Among Us, just came out several months ago. MR, ancient mythology depicts these demons as being ugly-looking creatures. I mean, wings, horned heads. Why do they do that? Do they look this way?
Well, no, they don't look this way. You know, I think media and arts and entertainment industry, as well as probably ancient history, has really depicted the image of the devil and evil in a very grotesque way. And the reason they've probably done that is to, you know, just kind of reinforce that these are bad things or these are bad forces. And, you know, so they have to kind of depict these things in very grotesque ways. But it's a very, very bad representation of what the devil and what dark forces actually look like. What Lucifer really looked like, or Satan, and the image we have in society of Satan is a man in, you know, red tights with horns, and he's carrying a pitchfork, and
he's got a tail.
Yeah, he's got a tail, and he's running around the fires of hell, and you know, he's got a gravelly, hoarse voice, right? That's not who Lucifer is at all. In fact, the biblical depiction of Lucifer is that he was the most beautiful creation or angel God ever created in heaven. And he was the highest angel and highest ranking angel there was. He protected the throne of God. And it says that he was made with all kinds of jewels, meaning gold, onyx, beryls, diamond. And however that was kind of built into his form or made in his form, I don't know, but he was called the light bearer. So when this being moved, it was like facets of light, like beaming. And it says that pipes and timbrels were built into his form, meaning that these were musical instruments. So when this being walked, he was walking worship. I mean, he was walking music. So Lucifer was actually like heaven's rock star. And in fact, he was so influential that he drew a third of the angels to his side in the rebellion against God and against heaven. And so this being was so beautiful and so influential and so high in office and in exaltation. Again, he was the most beautiful thing God ever created in heaven. And so we really need to shift our perception of who this devil is, because he's not this grotesque form. He's the most beautiful being that was ever in heaven.
Does he make it easier then to try to capture people's souls when that kind of an illusion comes forward?
Oh, yeah, yeah, because he'll come, you know, it says in the Bible that the devil transforms himself into an angel of light, right? So he can transform himself, and these dark forces can transform themselves into anything they want. They could transform you into deceased family members, transform into deceased family members, mimic their voices, in any form you want. And religious figures appear like gods. And, you know, so it's very easy with this power to deceive somebody who, you know, doesn't know otherwise.
I interviewed a Monsignor who's an exorcist a week or so ago, and I mean, he is totally convinced this evil and this demonic forces and possession occurs. I would agree with that. How about you?
Yes, absolutely. No, he's he's not wrong. I know which Monsignor you're talking about. And
Rossetti.
Yeah,
Monsignor Rossetti.
Yes, he in New York in the Catholic diocese, you mean?
He was, that's right.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, he's right. These possessions occur probably more often than we think. I just think that they're so personal and so, you know, there's such a stigma attached to it that not everybody's going to, you know, come out and announce like, hey, everybody, I was possessed. So it's not like this is like a, you know, people want to broadcast this, you know,
right,
this kind of encounter. But yeah, possession happens probably more often than we think.
MR, outside of your fourth grade episode, has anything horrible ever happened to you or frightening?
Yeah, I talk about one of my the most frightening encounter I've ever had. It's in chapter 3 of the book. And as the story goes, I was working in the marketing department of a local newspaper. I had an apartment downtown. Well, I lost that job and I lost the apartment. So I had to move out west, and I moved into a townhome that a family member of mine had abandoned. And then when I showed up at this place, it looked like the Munsters or the Addams family were living there. The grass was all overgrown, and even the door of the fence was crooked and rickety and even creaking on its hinges in the breeze. It was like a movie. And so I take residence in this house. And one night, I'm upstairs in the upstairs bedroom, and I'm trying to go to sleep, and I smell this rotten smell. It smells like rotten eggs and sulfur, some kind of chemical note. So I get up out of bed, and I'm smelling and sniffing around the house, and I walk down the stairs and to see if it's coming from the garbage, and it's not. And I'm walking around, just sniffing around, and then I look up at the air vent, and I get up on a chair to see if it's coming from the air vent, and this smell was coming from the air vent, and it's blowing right into my face.
Oh, it's like something dead is in there or something.
Right, this rot, and I thought it was a rat, right? I thought it might be a dead rat, but I've smelled rat before, but this was beyond dead rat. And so I got up off the chair. I mean, I got off the chair, and then I cut the power to the AC at the utility box. And I went back up onto the chair and to see if it was, and it was still coming out. It was still blowing.
It's still blowing out. Really?
It's still blowing that rotten egg fume smell right on my face without any mechanical assistance. So I, at that point, got very suspicious that something was happening in the home,
something evil or something physical?
Something spiritual, evil, spiritual and evil.
Uh-huh.
You know, and something was happening in the home, and I was like, well, you know, what could I do? It was just a smell, right? So I go back up the stairs, I go back in the room, and I climb back into bed. And I'm laying there with my eyes closed, and I see a shift in the light from beneath my eyelids. You know how you could see a shift in the light when you're, you know, with your eyes closed? And it was that. And I rolled back over. I didn't look. I rolled back over. And out of the darkness, I heard a voice call my name. And it said, Michael.
Oh, boy.
Real long and slow and serpentine. And it sounded like it was far away, but it sounded like it was very near, too. Like it was coming from, like, a cave. And when I rolled over to see what was there, there was a figure in black at my bedside.
Oh.
And it was standing over me. And it was tall, lanky, with crooked shoulders, and its head was cocked. And it was looking down at me, smiling with this broad, menacing smile. And then I looked down, and its hand, which was a claw, was crawling up my chest. Its aim was to choke me, strangle me.
How'd you get out of that?
Well, I will tell you that in a second. Just let me finish this. What this entity is or was, and when I looked into its face or its cowl, I could see its dark eyes were lightless. There was no light in these eyes. It was just purely dead. Dead eyes with no gleam in them like you and I would have, you know. And when I looked down at its gown, it wasn't in strips of, you know, in strips or tear or anything like that, but it was neat rectangles that were black and gray but got darker as they went further back because you could see through it, and it was as much physical as it was spiritual, because it was 3D, but you could see through parts of it, and so when I looked down at that thing, that the robe was flowing like it was like underwater. It had this real wavy look to it, and I was like, wow, that's really is a beauty to that movement. It's really strange, a strange thought, you know? And, but when I saw this thing was, you know, the hand creeping up my chest and it meant to strangle me, I called out, this thing came with such dark power. I was froze for a minute and I could feel this hatred emanating off of this being, this evil spirit. And not only could I feel it like on my body, but I felt it through my body like a hot boiling tar. This thing hated me and it hated humanity. And I could just feel its disdain, you know, coming off of it. And so when I was finally able to speak, because they take your breath. Oh, you know, they take your breath away, so you can't call out.
Hold on, MR. We'll let you finish that story when we come right back, because you got to tell us how you saved yourself. And then we'll take calls on Coast to Coast AM.